Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of What Now with Trevor Noah. On today's episode, I sit down with comedian and international movie star, the one and only Kevin Hart. And I'll let you know now, I always have fun conversations with Kevin Hart, but this conversation may have been one of my favorites, I think. We get into comedy, life, and everything that makes Kevin Hart who he is in some really interesting ways. I really had a great time chatting to him, and so I think you'll enjoy the conversation too. This is What Now with Trevor Noah. Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card is issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you're just starting or managing a growing brand, let's be honest, having a good website is incredibly important. And look, I love tech just as much as the next guy, but if you're like me, the thought of making a website from scratch, well, it can be pretty daunting. Well, that is, unless you have all the right tools, like search engine optimization features, because what's the point of making a website if nobody can find it? Or things like built-in templates, so you don't have to start from scratch, and seamless payment methods ready for your customers. Now that's starting to sound like fun. Well, all you have to do is head to squarespace.com for a free trial and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain by using the code Trevor.
Takes off my shit, huh? That's what he does. Give me a hug, man. How you doing, man? Look at him. Look at him. He fucked up my backdrop. What happened to our stuff?
Sit down, Kim.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hi, Barry.
How are you? I'm ready, Trev.
Is this how you dress every day?
This?
Yeah. How far do you live from here?
I don't want to talk about it. They make me drive so far because I do it because I sacrifice for my team. I'm in Calabasas, so it takes me an hour and 15.
You come in every day?
I come in. When I'm here, do I come in every day? Yeah.
So it's an hour 15 to come in?
Hour, because I'm leaving during traffic time. But if I wait, then it's like a 35-minute ride. No traffic, 35 minutes.
That's terrible. Are you going to get a drone?
A drone?
Yeah.
Why am I getting a drone?
You haven't seen the drones that are coming out?
That you can fly inside?
They'll be coming out in a few years. There'll be little drones that you can fly in.
Why do I want to fly in a drone?
You don't want to be in traffic, Kev.
Why can't I just... Oh, wait. You're talking like the drones are
and then you can fly,
just go above traffic.
You're gonna be in a drone. I can see you.
Now, I'm not going to lie to you.
I promise you right now, you're going to be in a drone.
If you're telling me that it's not going to fuck up my clothes... And I can get in the drone. I'll do it. If you're telling me I can get in the drone.
You know, most people would worry about their health.
No. They got to come with some type of, they got to have airbags. That drone going to have an airbag.
I think they do, actually. I think they do.
Before we start, how's your tour shit going? Everything great?
It's going good, man.
Good for you, man.
Are you back? You're back on now.
I'm warming up.
You're in like cooking mode.
Yeah,
you're not warming up. You're in cooking mode.
It's good.
You can always feel, you know what's funny is you can always feel when a comedian is... So I feel like comedians have three stages. We have, will I ever be funny again? And then we have cooking mode where you're excited. And you feel like everything's coming together.
Yeah.
And then you have, this material is boring. I need to find a new job.
That's at the end of,
I think that's
at the end of.
You want to tape just before that.
You got to go. But that's why I always tape my special early though. Like when I'm
Wait, what do you mean early? Like
so
how early?
When I'm in, if I'm on tour, because you know I do, you know, I'm probably 160 shows when I tour. So when I'm at like, when I feel the peak of the set, when I'm laughing at the jokes.
160 shows?
I do a lot of shows, Trey.
Wow.
Because my process starts, comedy clubs, theaters, back to comedy clubs, back to theaters. Then I'll go arenas.
Wait, wait, why are you going back? What happened? What went wrong?
Nothing went wrong, but you do it to make sure, like, all right, let me make sure I'm not jumping out the gun too fast.
Okay.
Because once you start killing in the theaters, that means I should destroy in a comedy club.
I remember talking to Dave years ago. There's a time when Dave Chappelle, for those listening, Dave never used to want to do arenas.
I did it.
And then he... And then he, I mean, obviously everyone wants to see him, so now he has to do bigger venues.
No, I
but
did
you definitely lose something.
I sparked the arena bug.
And wait, you did
with
that?
Dave? Absolutely. I sparked it with Dave and Chris, right? I said
so I blame you
for what, Dave doing arenas. Saying.
Yeah.
And Dave not only
do you prefer arenas?
I gotta be honest with you, Trev. I gotta be honest with you, man. I do. But let me tell you why. Hear me out.
Go.
Hear me out why. And I bet when I say this, you agree.
Go.
And here's how I got Dave. It's how I got Dave bit with the bug. I said, listen to me, Dave. The beauty of doing the arenas when you're a good comic is turning the arenas into an intimate environment.
Okay.
You can turn it into.
You can get close. You can never turn it into.
Oh, my God.
Kev, you can never turn it into.
Oh, my God.
Kev.
Oh, my God.
The thing about arenas is I always feel like the laughter's not happening in my section. Have you ever sat in an arena? You always feel like that section, you're like, who are those people?
Yeah, those people have a good
time. What jokes are they getting?
Yeah, they're having a good time.
They're really laughing. And then when you go there, they're not really laughing as loud as you thought. Because arenas have this weird, because the sound is not designed for laughter. It's designed for, you know, the basketball game or the whatever game is supposed to play there. Whereas when you're in a theater, It always feels like every single laugh is coming from every single person, no matter where you're sitting in the room.
Can I tell? Okay, so this is where your friend Kevin Hart, the overthinker, goes ham. Okay, think about my production.
Yes,
I think about every aspect.
Excessive, I must say.
Very
excessive.
I mic the audience, so the same way you can hear me on a microphone,
you can hear the audience.
You can hear the audience laughing. So I'll probably do like 8 mics, maybe 8 to 10 mics.
So that the audience can hear the audience.
You can hear the audience.
Oh, I like that. So I need to find what section the mics are in so I can just shout comments in your
so
show.
So you can just shout out.
I can just
find
the mic
is
and
here,
just shout things out.
I know you put a mic
You're
here.
You're a lot smaller in real life. Just shout things up to the microphones. I'll just be the guy heckling in a 10,000 seat arena.
I'm gung ho on making that experience the best. But here's what you guys did.
You do love that.
But here's what you guys did.
You love being the best of the best of the best of, like, you have this weird. Where did you get that from, by the way? Did you play a lot of sport when you were a kid? Mm-hmm. Like you're ultra competitive.
Yeah.
But like you're ultra competitive as if you also played sports where you have to play against yourself.
That's the competitive. That's the biggest person I'm competing against. Like, I've never been competitive against my peers. I've been envious.
No, you're competitive against your peers. Come on, Kev.
I'm envious. I've never been competitive. I'm envious of my peers.
Okay.
And I've said to myself, in my competitive nature, oh, my God, man, that's such a good writer. Such a great writer.
Yeah.
Such a great joke teller. Such a great storyteller. God, I got to get back in the lab. I gotta really raise the bar for myself because I'm so blown away by what this particular talent has put on display. This particular talent has put on display. I'm envious of your political humor. I'm envious of how you can go in between political humor and then go into a space of travel, culture, different ethnicities, your stance
and
take.
You're far too kind.
I'm envious of that.
You're far
because
too kind.
That's not my thing.
Right.
So the thing that others do at a high level, to be envious is the biggest compliment.
Huh.
That's the biggest compliment because I'm like, man, I wish I could operate like that because if I could, oh my God, there would be another dimension that I could get to.
Right, yeah.
I don't have that dimension. Hence why I stay away from it. You don't see me ever doing political humor.
My favorite political bit of yours, and I know it wouldn't be considered political, but I think it was way more political than anyone would ever think, is the bit where you were talking about being sucked into a Black Lives Matter protest.
Oh my God. Black man in the middle with a bullhorn going off.
Black lives matter. And if you don't think they matter, then you're part of the problem. And today we find a solution. The solution is death. Every black person that showed up here today is willing to die. We will all die today. We don't give a fuck about life. If you black and you here, it's because you came to die. If you black and you in this circle around me, it's because you ready to die first. I look down. I'm in the fucking circle. I said, wait a minute. That's not why I came. I didn't come for that. That's not why I'm here.
Can I tell you something?
True story.
Yeah, but what I loved about that bit was, whether it was intentional or not, it told a very true story about how so many people get sucked into the allure of appearing to be what they're not. And now you just, that speech that you gave.
You're in it.
I don't even remember. I just remember trying to repeat it to my friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It ain't go, what did you say? It ain't go.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Now I got to give a speech. You ever say something, and while you're saying something, you realize you're not saying nothing, but you got to keep trying to say something, even though you know it's nothing? That was my fucking speech. This is my speech, word for word. Verbatim, this is my speech. All right? Y'all already know what it is. And what it is what it's going to be.
It ain't gonna be what it is.
It ain't gonna be what it is.
You win it. And what I still say
that to my friends just randomly. I'll be like, "Hey man, it ain't gonna be what it is.
Yeah, it ain't what it was.
Yeah, man.
It ain't what
it
is.
You know what it is.
That joke was so dope. For your people watching, listening, it was dope because to my point, I don't do political humor at all. Yeah. But it was about getting sucked into the thing that you think you're supposed to do.
Yes.
And I was like, man, you know, everybody around me, you know, giving this thing energy, and I got a feeling about it. I'm going.
You know, can I tell you one of the hardest things I think people struggle with is, so one of my favorite movie scenes of all time, and I don't know why this left such an indelible impression on me, was, did you ever watch the movie Devil's Advocate?
Absolutely.
It was Charlize Theron, Al Pacino, Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
There's a scene in the movie. So the plot of the movie, for those who haven't seen it, and I'll spoil it because you're not going to see it, whatever, is basically Keanu Reeves plays this hotshot young lawyer. Keanu Reeves plays that lawyer. Charlize Theron is his wife, and they're this perfect couple. They meet Al Pacino. He's running this law firm. Turns out he's actually the devil.
The devil.
Yeah, and Keanu Reeves is basically litigating a case that is terrible. But because he wants to be this lawyer, he's going to do whatever it takes. The conversation is basically, what are you willing to trade? Mm-hmm. You're willing to trade your soul for everything. He doesn't do it in the end, but there's a moment where now he's the hero guy.
Yeah.
And then a reporter comes to him and says, can I do a profile piece on you? And he goes, no, I don't want fame. I don't want any of this. And the guy goes, come on, a lawyer with a conscience, everybody will love it. Mm. And Charlize looks at him and goes, come on, baby. Mm-hmm. Come on, do it. Just like and he that. Goes, okay, I'll do it.
Just like that.
And they leave, and I'll never forget. The journalist turns into Al Pacino, looks at the camera, and he says a line that he dropped in the beginning, and he goes, "Vanity, my favorite sin." I don't know how old I just went to watch that movie because there was nudity in it.
There you go.
Because at that time you couldn't freely get nudity. No, I don't know if you remember these days.
It was what I like to call it was accidental porn.
Yeah, you did not see nudity when I was growing up. Yeah, like kids today, I feel bad for them because there's like a diminished joy in seeing nudity now. Yeah,
the random tit back in the day.
Are you kidding me?
Oh! Oh, pause it. That's crazy.
You had pause.
Oh, what?
I had nothing.
I'm all about.
I had nothing.
Accidental porn back.
We just saw it, and that was it. That was your moment. But so that movie came out. I wasn't old enough to go see it. So I remember I would sneak into. I don't know what movie it was at the time. So I'd always find a movie to sneak into that I could then go out into another. You know what I mean?
Like, okay.
The reason I've seen parts of Titanic so much is because I used to use Titanic to go and see The Matrix.
Okay. You use that. So you needed a clean movie to go see the bad.
You need a clean movie to go and see the bad. Yes. So Devil's Advocate, I couldn't get. But anyway, I remember that line. And for my entire life, what I've thought about is how hard it is to not get sucked into doing a thing that you may start off having good intentions doing and then now stay in for the vanity side of it. And I think a lot of what people do in like, let's say people start off on social media or even in the world, they go, I'm gonna protest for a good cause. I'm gonna say these things online. I'm gonna get into it. It starts off from a good place, but then you get that hit. You get that little hit where someone's
the little piece.
You know, like you said, hey, short king, do your thing. Mm-hmm. Come on,
come on, we need, and you go like, oh, now you start finding reasons to do a thing that maybe you don't actually believe in because it's addictive, man.
Well, you're high off the feeling.
Yeah, it's addictive.
I'll give you another reality moment, right? I remember where, you know, this is like when the meme, the power of the meme started, right? You know, like somebody would pass away and, you know, everybody's posting the meme. Yeah. Everybody's posting the picture of said person, right? And I remember, you know, I was like, oh, man, like I met that person like twice, man. Let me throw up a picture, you know, and show some love, right? And I put up the picture, and you know, I remember, you know, I don't get into the comments. Like I have no desire to go and read thousands of comments under my page. But the first one, I like go back to like look at the picture, and the first thing I see is, "You ain't even know him, bitch." And I was like, "Damn." I didn't really know him. I was like, what does family probably think?
Oh, man.
Probably never talked about me ever. I look like a fucking idiot. I'm a follower. I'm following the meme craze.
Oh, man.
I go find a picture off of the internet and put up with this man after he passed away. And the first comment I read was, "You ain't even know him, bitch." And I had to sit to myself. And I didn't.
The best internet comments are the ones where someone unwittingly stumbles upon the truth.
Yeah.
Those are the greatest internet comments because most comments online are noise and trash and hating. And then there's love, don't get me wrong. But let's say all the negative ones. It's just people who don't like you or whatever it is. But there will be someone who says something that is so true. Where even though they're hating on you, you go, oh man, you got me.
Oh, you got it. You nailed it.
Yeah, you got me.
You hit the hammer on the head. I am struggling with that. I do need to figure that out.
Oh,
I need to
man.
Figure it all out. But the concept attached to throwing yourself in environments that are not just conducive for you or who you are, you know, that was a template for that joke. And I love the honesty and transparency in it. But it also like acted as like a moment for me in my life where I was like, yo, I'm not doing that no more.
Mm-hmm.
In general, like I'm not putting myself in any position of discomfort based off of what I think people could possibly think if I were to go through with the thing that they think I need to do. It's too much.
Yep.
That's too many thoughts about the thought that has not yet shaped itself into actually being the thing to think about. Like I'm not four steps ahead
anymore. Yeah.
I'm no longer that machine or entertaining the idea attached to that machine.
What do you think changed in your life? I could be completely wrong. I'm taking a shot here.
Okay.
Every artist has a moment in their lives where something happens, something shifts, and you see that shift apparent in their work. There is no denying that you came out with two of, I would say, these seminal specials when you first came out, right? It was Laugh at My Pain, Little Grown Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were. You remember, we all know what they were like. In comedy, we all know what those specials are like. There are specials where you can go like, damn, that was it. That's a timestamp. That right there, you can't. Kevin Hart becomes a movie star. You kill it in everything. I mean, I remember 40-year-old virgin. You were honestly, I think, one of the top cameo performers pound for pound I've ever seen.
It was a real
You would
similar.
Step into a movie and everybody in the theater would be killing themselves and nobody would know your name.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would know who that guy was. They would just go, I love... Every time I tell people movies you've been in, they'll be like, he was in that?
Along
and then I go, that
Polly.
Scene.
Along
and,
came
yeah,
Polly.
And then they go, oh, that was... Oh, shit, I remember. Oh, I didn't even know. And I
cameo
wanted,
man.
I wanted, so in a weird way, I sometimes think some people feel like you were this immediate overnight success because in a strange way, they didn't remember all of these characters you were playing in all of these movies. Do you get what I'm saying?
I mean,
it did seem like all of a sudden you were just the face of a franchise and the face of a movie. But I go like, Kevin Hart was grinding away in 3-minute segments in different people's movies.
I was number 7 and 10 on a call sheet for years. For years. And I was fearless about my approach to the cameo. I was fearless about my approach to getting the role. I can tell you it was crazy. In the Scary Movie franchise, right? Let me tell you how fearless I was. They were doing table reads, And my manager was like, hey, Kev, they're doing these table reads. They just want some personalities to come and like
right.
do the reads so they can see if the material's working. It's just a way for you to get seen by some people that do movies, comedies, et cetera. I was like, I'll do it, right? I go here. I'm improvising during the table read. I'm going off script, coming back to the script. In my mind, I said, if I do a good enough job, whatever the role is that I'm reading,
right.
I may have a shot at getting the role.
Right.
I leave the table read. Within an hour, my manager called me back. He says, Kevin, you didn't get that part, but they got a part for you that they want you to have. If you're into it, they want you to come back and they want to talk about the part with you.
Mm-hmm.
Very small part. Cameo part. It was a friend. I talk about the part, once again, fearless. Start improvising.
Yeah.
Doing things that I feel the character could do, could say, whatever. They love it. Oh my God. They write it in the damn script. Put all my ad-libs in the script. And it was, as we talk about the hit, the drug. Oh my God. So if I present the funny material, at times, if it works and I'm still on par with story or script, that can be my engine. That can be my entry point. So from that point on, I stepped up to all cameos. There was the Scary Movies. It was Along Came Polly. It was 40-Year-Old Virgin. It was Drill Bit Taylor. I can go down a list. Jake in Progress. I was the guy that would come in for a scene, and then after that scene, you wouldn't see me no more. But I made it my business to put together what I would consider to be some funny, impactful moments in whatever the thing was.
Yeah.
And I said, if I do enough of them, the casting directors are all the same. Eventually, they got to say, this guy deserves a bigger part, or we should do something else with the guy. And I remember I got my fucking feelings hurt. It just didn't happen. I look back, man, I had like 12 cameos, all these credits, but nobody knew me from the credits. Nobody fucking knew me. Like, I was the guy. He was in, shit. What's your name? God damn it. Baby, what's the fucking, we just saw him. What's the shit he was in? Clapping, stomping, trying to come up. They never could get it. The motherfucker he had on the hat. They saying stupid shit right in front of your face. And you like, just ask me, man, so I could tell you. Nah, fuck it then. They just leave.
The worst is when they say something that diminishes you in front of you.
Oh, absolutely.
While still giving you a compliment, by the way. They'll be like, he's the dude.
That was a dumb motherfucker.
And then someone will say something and be like, no, he's not that funny. No,
he ain't that good. He's a stupid motherfucker. What's the stupid motherfucker we said? What's the motherfucker we said ugly as shit?
Oh, man.
I remember saying, all right, I'm going back to stand-up. Focus on stand-up.
Yeah.
Stand-up got big. After the specials, there was a moment where I transitioned from multiple shows at comedy clubs to multiple shows at theaters.
Yeah.
And when it got to the multiple shows at theaters, I was like, they're going to have to come. Like, the movies are going to have to come because people are showing up. So
they?
At some point, it has to happen.
Did they?
The movies did not come in the manner I thought they would, right?
Yeah.
The opportunity did.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
And I believed in the opportunity. So
very religious of you. It's very spiritual. My mom would say something like that.
The opportunity came.
Yes. This story is amazing, but I often try and remind people that most of the time, the moral that you will take from a story of a person who was successful is the incorrect moral. If you get an opportunity to go to a table read, read what they give you.
Oh, yeah. Don't do what I did.
Yeah, don't do what this
don't
guy
do what
did.
I did.
Don't do
Please.
What Kevin Hart did.
That's actually a really good point. Like,
don't do what this... I can imagine people walking into rooms, getting a script, and they're like, we need you to help us work on the script. Yeah. And you're like, bam, boom, bow. shit.
Don't do,
oh, I'm
don't
sorry,
do what I did.
Kevin, can we... This is Shakespeare. I just thought maybe...
And I made sure I set it up correctly by saying... I said, let me tell you how crazy I was. I made sure I set it up correctly. Like, that's how nuts I was. I went in there not thinking about the consequences. I'm thinking about how do I make my presence felt?
Yeah.
How do I leave a lasting impact? And
that could have turned out so horribly.
It could have.
I almost hope it would have, and I still hope you would have achieved your success, but I would have loved that moment to turn out terribly.
Yes,
just for someone else to have a story where they go,
let me tell
Kevin
Hart.
Let me tell you my Kevin Hart story.
This idiot.
This guy.
This guy. Talk about no respect for
you
a writer.
When they're sitting in those agency meetings, and Kevin Hart, this guy comes in. I've never seen anything like, I mean, this guy, he couldn't, every word, he added his own.
Yeah.
I mean.
Ridiculous.
This is,
no respect,
you know,
for the craft.
He started rapping in the middle of, I mean.
I remember there was one time I stood up like one of the things like, yeah, don't check me. I was going for it.
We're going to continue this conversation right after this short break.
This episode is brought to you by the Inspire Collection by Kalia. Just because you're working out doesn't mean you shouldn't look fabulous. The Inspire Collection by Kalia was designed with both style and performance in mind. It looks good, feels good, and stays put no matter how you move. And the collection has everything you need for a day at the gym. A support bra, crop tanks, bike shorts, amazing leggings, and more. It's their most versatile collection yet. Shop the Inspire Collection by Kalia now, exclusively at Dick's Sporting Goods.
So you have these seminal moments in your stand-up. And then I feel like, could be completely wrong, and don't be offended when I say this, but I feel like there's a moment in between in your stand-up where it almost felt like Kevin Hart was preserving Kevin Hart more than Kevin Hart was just being and doing Kevin Hart.
God, absolutely.
And I say this as a comedian who's experienced
it. That's not offensive at all. That's truth.
So every comedian starts off in what I argue is the best place.
Mm-hmm.
You have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You get on stage. The only thing you have is your comedy, and the only thing you receive is a laugh. You don't even get money. People don't realize. In the clubs, we were getting $5, $10. Pookie still owes me $15.
Yeah, you got to get it.
Do you know? That it'll never happen. I've accepted this, Kevin. I've accepted this.
You got to get it, bro.
So
I'm going to get mine.
So that's all you're getting is the laugh and the confirmation of a joke working or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Something clicks. You start to become successful. Now, there's a moment where on this bell curve, you have nothing. You reach the peak. And now it feels like you have everything. You don't have everything, but it feels like you have everything because mm-hmm. it's more than what you had.
Mm-hmm.
And now fear sets in. And you go, can I tell that joke? Should I perform like that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that crazy? Do I switch up my style? Because comedians are always evolving. And now, because you have the people at this point, you go, do I keep them at this point? What did I do that they liked? I guess I got to keep doing that.
Spot on.
Now, especially in this special, I don't know what it is, Kev. You walked out and you feel, even the baseball bat itself is such a you thing.
Y'all see this fucking bat in my hand? Bring your ass up to the stage. I'm going to knock your fucking head off, I swear to God. Okay? We're sick of your shit. We're fighting back. Don't you come up here. Knock your goddamn head to the top of this arena. Don't you come up here.
It just feels like it's like, you know, I'm just like, what changed?
Well, first of all, Trevor, it's a great question. All right? It's a great question. It's a great observation. By the way, to my point earlier, it's what you do very well. Here's the big change. The first hint of success, the fear attached to keeping the success clicks in immediately,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, shit, we sold all these tickets. God damn, whoa, tour was crazy, sold out all over. All right, well, shit, tour's over. Well, I got to get back to the comedy club, and I got to figure out what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
Because I got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
After a tour's over, I want to make this perfectly clear to an audience watching, listening. You kill that material immediately.
Yeah.
I cannot recite a joke of old from any spot. It's killed.
Mm-hmm.
I blink and I fucking delete it immediately because it has no more value or meaning. The special's taped. The tour is over. Well, what the fuck am I going to talk about next?
Yep.
So the scramble and figuring out what that will be is the scary scramble before your like polished comedian legs present themselves. When you're the new comic and you're the new star, you're the new, like, you're new. So although you got this light, you're not polished. You're not poised.
You're also not situated.
You're not. You got a hit, and that hit was great. But you don't have an extensive contract.
No.
There's no guarantee to the next.
There's no guarantee
10 years.
On anything.
There's no guarantee that this next tour is going to sell as many tickets as this one.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that the next movie will be a hit. There's no guarantee that the next starring role will be the right role. There is no guarantee. By the way, at the time when I was coming up, what we might overlook is that I was in a fucked up period of movies. I was in a period of Black Actor Bomb, bye-bye. I was in a period of y'all can't sell movies internationally.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You can't
oh,
do
yeah.
this. And if these movies don't have any domestic success, yeah. bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bad investment. I told you Black directors were going into director jail if they bomb.
Yeah.
You don't get another shot. So the fear and the stomach bubbles.
This kid just said Will, the stomach
the
bubbles.
The stomach bubbles.
That is a perfect
Will
word
Packer,
for them.
Tim Story and myself, we did Think Like a Man 1, 2. We did Ride Along 1. We did Ride Along 2. Me and Will Packer did Wedding Ringer and About Last Night. I just named off 6. By the way, we have more, okay? Those 6 movies, you're looking at the trajectory of Kevin Hart. There was never a comfortable moment for release.
You would tell me bubbles the whole time?
I mean, for Ride Along, me and Cube, I remember me and Cube being on a press tour, and we were like, boy, we hope they come out, because they done spent some money on this. If they don't come out,
damn.
I mean, we ended up doing $140 million. Stomach release. Oh, oh my God. Ride Along 2, man, if we don't do $140,
yeah.
Oh,
it's a
shit.
Failure immediately.
Oh, fuck, man, if we don't crack the code and surpass,
because
they spent more money. The pressure. Well, let's go to stand up where there is no budget. That's you.
Yeah.
You're roaming on stages for free, developing the material that you hope grabs the audience's attention that they'll laugh, love, so that you can then grow, announce a special. By the way, when you announce it, here come the bubbles. Mm-hmm. Oh shit. I hope they buy these fucking tickets. They're selling. All right. What? They're selling.
We never get over that feeling,
no,
by the way. We never
no.
get over that feeling. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, what changed? Kev?
What changed for me?
What changed?
What changed for me was I got to a place of not just success, but understanding. So my understanding now is, yo, I built a fan base. I built a global fan base of people that no matter what show up because they go, I like that guy. And in that.
But how did you develop the understanding?
The understanding comes where the noise from the outside, you realize is not noise. The things
can
that
I,
you
can
think.
Can I throw something at you?
Go ahead.
Could be wildly wrong. I noticed the shift, or I noticed the shift happening most apparently after the car accident.
That was a different shift. Shift number one came with the understanding of, I want to be a brand.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a global brand. I want to own my brand so that my worry attached to the craft goes away because I control it. So once I saw that the idea of control, it's something that I could dictate if I owned it. And I did that. And I was like, it's kind of like dope.
You think that changed your level of fear?
1,000%. Because I control it. So I'm using stand-up to set up the movie. The movie.
I don't know.
Listen,
I don't
listen,
know.
Listen
I hear
this.
You, but I don't know. Because I feel like you had that drive before. I disagree.
No, the drive.
I
listen,
disagree.
Drive is drive, right?
I don't. Yeah, but what I'm saying is, what I'm challenging you on is this, is like, and I say this as an observer and as a fan of yours. I think there's something you might take for granted. Because don't get me wrong, there's Kevin Hart, the businessman. And you're very apt at doing that. But sometimes, like, as Kevin Hart, the human being, you have moments where, and not to get too deep, but you have moments where, you know, because of how you grew up, because of your family unit, because of, you know, what it was like growing up with your dad as an addict, because it was like seeing your mom in her grind and everything, I think there are moments where you forget how much you push and drive because of the fear of losing all of the things that have helped you and your family to get to where you've gotten to?
The fear is what motivates the complete sentences behind the drive. In other words, like...
But what I'm saying is that fear has slipped and something happened and it cannot come from... I do not believe that the drive can be the reason for the drive. I believe, and I could be wrong, but I will fight you on this.
Okay.
There's something that comes. There is, you know when human beings are injured, Kev, there's something that happens. I remember talking to an amazing woman who's a disability advocate. And she was one of the people who led the revolution in America on just getting like wheelchair access into venues. Things that you don't think were like you think of today as common.
Mm-hmm.
This was not normal.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, hey, can we get a ramp into... And people were like, whoa, come on. What is this now? We're going to have ramps for you? Whoa, come on. And people were like, we're in wheelchairs. And they're like, yeah, well, that's not my fault. We're going to build ramps for you? Oh, my God. This was a thing. Yeah. I could not believe this when I watched the documentary and when I spoke to this woman. Amazing woman. And we were having this conversation. She's very funny, by the way. And I said to her, I was having the conversation. I said, you know, disabled people. And I said, as an able-bodied person. And she said, no. She says, rather think of yourself like this. And I paraphrase. She said, think of yourself as currently abled. Because she said the mistake a lot of people make is they think that disability is both a permanent and predictable thing that'll happen to everybody.
Yeah.
But there is a form of disability that every human being is going to encounter at some point in their lives. It may be reduced mobility when you're older,
mm-hmm.
and it may be, unfortunately, a disease or, mm-hmm. in your case, a severe traumatic accident.
1,000%.
That both threatens your life and limits your ability to exist and be as a human. Like, and Kevin Hart, if I look at your trajectory as a person, there are two things that were concurrently happening all the time. Growing, moving, you know, constantly pushing as a comedian and as a performer and doing the same thing physically. You've been playing sport your whole life. Mm-hmm. You've been pushing, growing, moving. It's been part of you. There is something that you have to grapple with when there's a possibility of paralysis. There is something that you have to go through when a doctor walks into a room and goes, hey, your spine may not be what it was before. And I think you move on so quickly sometimes that you don't allow yourself to experience those moments. You move very quickly.
I move very quickly.
You're very good at it, don't get me wrong. And I understand a lot of it.
But the fear, you got to understand real fear, right? Like, you come from a place of understanding where you can have real fear. When you come from the bottom and you start to experience things outside of the bottom that you didn't know existed or could be true.
Yeah.
And you continue to push and you experience more. And you obtain more. The fear is going back to the bottom.
Yeah.
The fear...
The further you get from... This is the thing I always try and explain to people. There are a few things that are more terrifying than starting to do well when you've come from nothing and when your family has had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how far the bottom is.
Yes.
I always tell my friends who've come from well-off families, I go, the one thing I envy that you have, you do not think of your fall as being as far as mine is.
Yes.
So when you think of failing to, let's say, level 5 or 6, because that's what your number mm-hmm. is, your mm-hmm. bottom is.
Mm-hmm.
I think of failing and I go, this takes me back to zero.
Zero.
Complete zero.
Zero. That fear,
yeah.
That logic, right?
Yeah.
When you start building, the comfort for me comes from, I'm building so that if the fall ever happens, I got multiple things to grab on before I hit the ground.
Oh, you're scaffolding.
So,
okay.
So think about when...
We've got a scaffolding brother over here.
Think about when you fall.
You need to go to therapy, Kev.
If you attempt to fall.
You need to go to therapy.
No, I'm not going to.
You need to go to therapy.
No, and you just use the therapy word on me.
You need to go to therapy.
Here's where...
I see who you are. You're a scaffolding brother.
Here's where...
I know you very well.
Here's where you have to think. Here's where you have to go,
man,
and think, right?
Everything Kevin Hart's about to say, I advise every listener to listen to, but don't follow it.
All right.
Don't follow
okay.
it.
Okay.
It works, but it's not a permanent solution.
What Trevor is saying, hey, some people fall and they go, I'm not going to use my hands to break this fall.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Let me finish. Tell people
about the scaffolding that you're going to tell them about this.
I'm going to fall on my face.
I'll even say it to you and you tell me if I'm right about what you're about to say.
I'm going
to
say it first.
Let me say it first you tell me if I'm right.
I'm going to say it first.
Okay,
because you may try to say it differently and make it sound bad. So I'm going to say it first. Here is what it is, man. Like, I have watched people in our business
Yeah.
comfortably perform, comfortably work.
Yes.
and walk away
with nothing.
With nothing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The fear that I have
yes.
is attached to the walk away.
Yes.
Or the opportunity to actually sit with self and go, I have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I have all these years in a business that I've given my all to, and my all has done nothing but create success for the operating machines, studios, factors, puzzles, yeah. promoters, et cetera, all around me. And as the engine to that operation, I'm left with the shirt on my back
yes.
or the moment of memory.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that and because of me seeing that, I said, I refuse to not have anything. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to build as I go now that I've worked and I got to this point where, okay, I saw all the success, but like if you go grown little man, we go laugh at my pain.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, well, the tours and all this stuff and the lights or whatever is great. I'm selling tickets. I'm paying money out the ass with commissions and everything,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really have anything. The opportunity came up for me to go and put the special in theaters where they were like, you're going to take the money you just made and you're going to put it into the,
mm-hmm,
you're going to fund mm-hmm. that and put that into the theaters?
Right, right.
And I was like.
But let's get to the scaffolding,
so
Kevin
Hart. I said, I'll
you're
own it.
You're avoiding okay. the, no, go to I'm the
getting
scaffolding.
It. I'm getting it. Here's the scaff. I said, but I'll own it.
Okay.
Okay. So I fell in love with owning that one thing.
Okay.
All right. And then owning that thing, I said, you know what? I want to build something else to own.
Okay.
All right. I want to own this too.
Right.
You know what? I got two things that I own.
Okay.
All right. Fuck that. I'm going to own something else. Let me go figure this real estate shit out.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to own that. Hey, man, you know what? This company shit. It's not as hard as these people think it is. And okay. if I build it correctly,
I'm getting into venture capital. Right? Let's
right?
go.
Now, VC, where mm-hmm. they investing at? Mm-hmm. And why I got to take, why I got to listen to you and I got to give you my, why can't I raise my own and own my own? Okay. Now, guess what? This carpet that we stand on comfortably one day will be pulled out. One day these motherfuckers will come and go, that's it. And when they do, if you got shit that takes a long time to go down, or if you got buildings that just rock a little bit, well, the security of mind, the security of self lasts. My security of mind, my security of self only lasts because I get to go, hey, no matter what, you can't take what I built. And what I built, it ain't under my name. It's under the brand. It's under the entity. It's under the infrastructure that I created that everybody else has ignored. So when I fall down, oh yeah, Kevin Hart may fall, but these buildings gonna fucking stand with or without you. And hey, when I'm done, although it may be rough, rocky, whatever, my fucking kids gonna look at them buildings and they gonna look at that shit and they're gonna go, man, dad did some dope shit. My security comes from the understanding that the brand, the operation, the movement, the business outside of Kevin Hart
yes.
is a business that works.
I appreciate
that. And that for that thing,
yes.
I will never compromise my now feeling of comfort. So me going and selling tickets or not.
Now it's a bonus.
It's a bonus.
Okay, now it's a bonus.
Now it's
okay,
a bonus.
I see what you've done.
You see what I'm saying?
You're scaffolding,
it's a,
brother.
It's a thank you.
I'm completely
and
with you.
No pressure at all.
I hear you completely.
There's no feeling attached to it. If I walk into an arena, right, today, and that arena is a quarter or full.
Because 50 Cent like, bought the front rows.
Yeah, who are you? 50 bought the front row. You know what? Where I'm at today, I'm like, man, I'm going to give these people a great show. But you know what? I had a good fucking run. I had about 13 years at the top of
Have you ever done a half empty arena, by the way?
No.
I've done one.
No.
And can I tell you?
I shouldn't have said it that fast. That sounded really asshole.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's
I know,
fine.
But let's edit that out. Ask me that question again.
Kev, have you ever done an empty arena, a half empty arena?
Let me think. Have I done an empty arena? I don't know. I don't know if I have. I would have to think about it. I mean, I'm quite sure there's probably been some.
We're gonna go with the first tier. I like that better. So I've done one before. This was in Springfield, Missouri. It was really the only venue that we could go to. Deep Republican, like little enclave. And my team said, "This is it. We don't know the promote. You've never been. We don't even know what's gonna happen here. We don't even know if you have fans in this place. Let's see what happens." I said, "Well, let's go." We went there. I think the arena. This is like a cut-down arena. The capacity was 6,000 people,
okay,
maybe.
Five, six.
Yeah, I think we sold 3,000 or 4,000 tickets.
Okay.
Everybody, when I walked in, everybody looked like we were at a funeral. Not the audience. I mean, everyone backstage. You know when the promoter can't look at you?
Yeah.
You know when, like, everybody's ashamed.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this moment.
They also don't know what your ego capacity
is in dealing
with that.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
I said, oh, how did we end up doing? And they said, well, you know, we've tried to move some people down. We've tried to move things around. It should be a good show. I was like, okay, hey, man. And I remember I was chatting to my manager Derek, who like works with me on the road, and I said to him, he said, hey, man, I'm sorry. You know, we didn't know what this market would be. And I said, Derek, it is so crazy how our perspective has shifted in the wrong direction.
Mm.
I said there was a time when we would dream of selling 300 tickets
in
a place where I actually have fans.
Yeah.
Now, everybody here is morose when we have sold 3,000 tickets in Springfield, Missouri. I was like, the fact that people have come out in Springfield, Missouri
is a big deal.
Is wild.
I said,
if you think about it properly, there are always more people not coming to your show than people who are coming to your show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you focus on the people who have come to your show,
it's a bigger show.
You've made it the best show. Man,
it's a bigger show.
Can I tell you, I had more fun with that audience than I've had in a long ass time.
Yes.
Because they felt like they had chosen me. Because there's a weird thing that happens when an arena isn't full, by the way. There's two things. One, there's a feeling of doubt. Some mm-hmm. people in the audience are like, all right, clearly people know this is somewhere else we should be.
Yeah.
There's a moment of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And then you as the performer have to come out and show the audience that they did make the right
mm-hmm.
choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second feeling I find in those moments is the audience goes, no, we are specific in our choice. We've chosen Trevor Noah.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor Noah has chosen us.
Mm-hmm.
This is not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so this experience becomes more intimate.
There should be a feeling of pride.
Yeah. And so what I'm saying in that is the reason I say you're a scaffolding brother, which I don't mind. I have some scaffolding in me as well as a
person.
What
does scaffolding mean?
So
don't just throw therapy words out there and assume.
No, this is not therapy words at all.
I know,
this is not therapy speak at all.
Don't assume your audience
this
has
not,
been to,
this
the,
is not,
to the therapist
this
as well.
Is not, this is
That's
not,
a very selfish therapist. Like
This
like,
is not therapy talk at all.
Scaffolding is this definitely is, therapy talk.
It's like tummy bubbles.
What? We talk about
tummy bubbles
tummy
is like someone would use that in therapy
bubble
as well.
Stomach. Okay, all right.
If you like bubbles, stomach bubbles?
What I just said, that was not a therapy word. And I feel like...
If you say tummy bubbles, I go, that's a therapy word. It's just the way it's...
I would say gaslighting.
That's a therapy word.
Okay,
that's a therapy word.
Okay, good.
That's different.
Don't go anywhere, because we got more What Now after this.
What I mean by a scaffolding brother is there are two ways, or there are multiple ways, but I think two of the prominent ways for us to deal with the idea of having less or going backwards or diminishing in life or whatever it might be. The one way is to build scaffolding in our lives. And what that scaffolding is we go, okay, if as Kevin Hart, I'm not a movie star, okay, what do I have? If as Kevin Hart, I'm not a comedian selling out, what do I have? Okay, so let me diversify. I'm going to build up these companies. I'm going to build up these institutions. I'm going to own that. I'm going to own this. I'm going to own this. I'm going to own that. I'm going to own that. That way, I'm in a situation where my eggs are not in one basket. And that means that if in one space, I am, you know, unceremoniously kicked out, I still have everything else that I can go back to.
Mm-hmm.
I have basically created the scaffolding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why they use scaffolding in construction, so that they don't go backwards from that. It's like, all right, let's build around
mm-hmm.
this thing
mm-hmm.
to at least enable it to get to a certain place,
mm-hmm.
and then we can sort of move back. But it holds everything where it needs to be
mm-hmm.
while it is being built up, right?
I think that's a great breakdown.
Right? And I would encourage you to try it a little bit more. I know it's hard. Don't get me wrong, because you're Kevin Hart and you have this mountain that you've built. But I would encourage you as Kevin Hart to also realize beyond the brands, beyond the buildings, beyond all of those things. And I would even speak on behalf of your kids. I think you take for granted that the buildings may not have as much of an impact on your kids as the building that you've done with them.
I would say you're probably correct. It's not
until, probably.
Well, yeah, here's where you probably are correct. Right.
You said probably again.
Well, I'm gonna tell you why. I'll tell you why. Right. So, the idea of follow through early on, it presented itself, and I never took it serious. Right. School, I fucked it off. High school, SATs, fucked it off.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't take it serious. Abacadabra the whole way down. I'm going to Great Adventure to go be with my friends. You know, applying to college, trying to get into college. For what? Like, everybody, are y'all doing it? Fucked it off. Community college, 2 weeks. I'm out of here. This ain't for me. Sneaker store. I guess this is what it's going to be. Everything.
Because you worked at, where did you work at Foot Locker? Where
City
did you
Sports.
Work?
City Sports.
City Sports. City okay. Sports. Yeah.
Everything that was positioned in front of me for me to take serious, mm-hmm. that my mother tried her best to get me to understand,
yeah.
I fucked off. Swimming, successful in it. Could have had scholarships. Could have done whatever. I fucked it off.
You swim?
I'm a phenomenal swimmer.
Like at that level?
Yes.
I thought you had to be tall to be a good swimmer.
No, you
don't. No, this is not even a joke.
It sounds like it.
It's not a joke.
It really sounds like a dig.
Okay, let's go back. Let's go back. I gave you a chance. Let's go back on that one.
Yeah. You know, swimming.
You swam?
Yeah, I swam.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about your physical makeup that made you
what?
A good swimmer? Let's go to take three. Let's go.
You know, swimming.
You swam?
Yeah, I swam.
When I think of swimming,
yeah, what do you think of?
I find myself thinking of an archetype, a certain type of person.
Yeah,
you know, and this is because maybe swimming has been there's been gatekeepers.
Yeah,
in swimming, and so you think of you know how Michael Phelps.
Yeah,
they look a certain way.
Yeah, I know. You know, like we're you know we're what do they call it when you share the same love and you do the same thing, you practice with each other.
Yeah, but I think it's less about the drive. I'm talking about the physical aspects of the person.
Yeah, like I've been next to Mike in a swimming pool. Like,
Yeah.
You can't really tell us apart in that water. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's
all about the stroke.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, my freestyle was amazing. Butterfly was phenomenal.
Is that because you're pulling less?
What do you mean? What does that mean? When you say pulling less, what are you saying? It's all about strength, Trevor.
And drag, right?
Well,
isn't it about minimizing strength? Drag?
No, Trevor. It's about minimizing movement or wiggle, okay?
Yeah.
Great form in swimming provides great results. Now, granted, I fucked it off because I was a cheater, all right? I was a guy that was cheating in practice and half-assing it. I didn't want to do shit. The point that I'm making is that everything I was supposed to do seriously, I fucked it off.
Huh.
So when I finally cracked the code and figured out the thing that I could do, the fear is not fucking it off.
I like that.
I fucked it off. Okay. Everything else I fucked off. So this here, I'm not going to fuck it off. I'm going to not only take it serious, I'm going to get so good at it and do it at the best of my ability.
Right.
Oh shit, something else happened. Well, I'm not going to fuck that opportunity off either. Oh shit, another door happened. I ain't gonna fuck that off. Everything now as an adult, because the adult that was giving me the information was right. My mom was right.
When did you first start realizing how right your mom was?
When
in
you
life?
Realize how much you fucked off. when you look up and all your friends moving on and going away to college, they got scholarships, and you saying, "When did y'all apply? When did y'all apply to do that? Kev, you didn't apply. And now you realize you're the ignorant child.
Damn.
You're realizing you're the dumb child.
Do you feel like you got to the place where you got to reward your mother for the investment that she made in you? Because I know how hard it was, you know, for you losing her.
Absolutely not.
You didn't feel like in your lifetime you... No.
No.
You don't think she was... like because she, just as you were rising...
Mm-hmm. Fool's gold. I want to say this was like my...
Were you in Australia? Where were you shooting?
I was in Australia, but I'm just trying to think of where this movie... You know, this was basically like, you know, a big role for me.
Yeah.
Because I was number 3 or 4 on a call sheet.
It was like Matthew McConaughey,
Kate Hudson.
Uh-huh.
And this is a big role. So I went away to Australia, but this is like one of my like big roles.
Yeah, and your mom was sick at the time.
She was sick at the time. So she didn't get to... Like the world of benefits came way after. Meaning like... the real fruits of the labor.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, my mom didn't have a house. My mom, you know, we didn't have grass. My mom didn't have comfort in her life. My mom wasn't able to relax. And on her later stages of life, she was sick. So in the perfect picture of, I would love to provide my mom with the luxury item of comfort, of sit down and don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there is a dual thought and dual feeling of, I kind of navigate through this business in a way where I'm not bothered or like ruffled easily by the ups and downs of it. And I truly do feel, because I got the hand of on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I got an amazing guiding light.
Right.
And an amazing like talent of processing information, processing moments.
And that's good from your mom.
Absolutely.
On your dad's side, do you think you were ever able to forgive him? Do you think, you know, I know you had an interesting and tumultuous relationship. You connected as adults, but there's moments where you even see this in your documentary, by the way, if anyone's keenly observing, you can still see that there are moments where your dad has this, he had this hold over you. It's like, you know, it's like on the one hand, he's sort of holding you back. On the other hand, he's proud of you. And like most parents, he's limited in his ability to be perfect. Did you forgive him while he was still alive?
Absolutely. I think, you know, my dad.
Absolutely?
I
only say this because I think it's tough and it's hard for us to think about these moments. But like,
here's what I say, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's no reservation towards my dad.
Okay.
There's an understanding, like, you can't go back and change the things you did.
Yeah.
You can apologize and we can be grown and be men and move forward. But at this point, life wasn't about me. Like, I'm okay. Focus on being a grandpa. Don't worry about me at this point. And I'm telling them at face value, like, I'm good. I love you because you're my dad. I appreciate you for tabling the mistakes and the bad choices. By the way, I got some of you in me. So my bad choices are in my fucking blood. Like, I'm not the guy, to your point earlier, the monk or the walking staple of perfection. I get where I come from. I get where I'm a mess and where I'm not. But what I do very well is process reality. Mm-hmm. And reality is, you're my father. I don't want to take that away. I don't want to change that.
Yeah.
And your mistakes are great mistakes because they gave me great examples of what I shouldn't fucking do. Try my best to avoid that shit because look at the consequences of it.
Yeah.
You've lived through your consequences. You survived them. Yo, man, go be a dope-ass grandpa. Tell your grandkids some dope stories. Go get some dope toys. Go put that time in over there because you're going to get more joy out of that than you are going to get out of trying to redo or undo. When I'm telling you, I'm not looking back there. I'm looking up here. My joy is going to come from my kids going, hey, man, can we see grandpa? My kids are going to go. My joy is coming from my like saying, dad, we want to go back and spend time with grandpa. Don't know about your past.
You get a new chance. You get an opportunity.
Absolutely.
To rewrite a script.
That's your next version of Kevin.
Yeah.
That's the next version. That's your son's child.
My mom always said the reason they call them grandparents is because now you have a grand opportunity to be a different type of parent.
1,000%.
With different levels of wisdom, understanding, compassion, all of it.
My brother and my dad's relationship was a little rougher. They figured their shit out. My brother is pound for pound the best thing that ever happened to my kids. My brother has taken the role, if I have to go, he comes. I got to go on the road. My brother comes to the house. I got to go do movie or promo or whatever. My brother's out there. The feeling of love is never a void or never a missed opportunity. You have four kids that all stand on. Oh, yeah, when dad's out here, uncle come out, uncle helps us do this and that. My brother is the, hey, man, let me show y'all how to fly a kite. Let me show you. You never do a boomerang? Y'all never seen these old movies, Rascals? Kevin, you ain't showing Rascals.
That's funny.
Or Little Giants.
You've maintained the village, man.
You don't. All the shit that you overlook.
Yeah.
If you got a partner.
Yeah.
You got a partner in crime that really understands you and has your best interests. Well, I'm coming in, and dad is the cool dad that loves us and wants to do all the cool stuff, the dope activities. We watch movies. We chill. But Uncle got the activity game on lock.
I love this.
Dad,
team, man.
Uncle, you know, Uncle showed me how to throw a strike. You can't throw no strike. Let me see it. Throw it. I bet I knocked that ball out the park. No, you not. And my brothers, throw the strike. I'll beat the shit out that ball.
Oh, man. Bow.
My kid's like, dad, that's right. You know why I did that? Because your uncle ain't shit. Right. Now we got a great rapport. But the fun, the energy,
yeah,
that energy comes from an understanding of where we come from. So what you build is ultimately a comfort of just simply what you can fall back on.
Right.
And that fall back, what I want your listeners to understand, that fall back should be a feeling that we all have. After the pandemic, after the climate that we saw overtake our world, after we saw the economy shut down, well, we all should have a little fear of, if it happens again,
mm-hmm.
well, let me build something so I can fall.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't ever think about the fall, when you fall, you're not going to get up. That's a real thing. You will not get up. And we're in a business of folded chairs. By folded chairs, it means so many people chooses to no longer sit down on the chair. They say, you know what, fuck this. I'm going to fold this chair up and put it up. I'm done. And that comes from a mindset. It comes from a lack of understanding that you can create or build what makes you feel strong. If you want real strength, give yourself the bandwidth and mental infrastructure to feel as strong as you possibly need to go out and do the shit you want to do. Because now, fail or not, you feel good because you feel like you are investing into you and you can look back and see the shit. If I can say I own a pair of pants, well, those are my fucking pants. They mine. Can't take these pants from me. These are my pants.
This is scaffolding. It's back to scaffolding, Kim.
I need to do it.
This is back
well,
to scaffolding.
Well, call me the scaffolding king, okay? Because I'm going to build all that
he's
shit.
The scaffolding king.
Call it what you want. I got it. And I'm going to build it.
Do not put all your eggs in one basket. Don't. My dream is to not even have eggs.
Okay.
That's my dream.
Okay.
I may not get there, but it's my dream. It's my dream.
Before you say one more thing, I got to say this. And you talked about it because you touched on it a little bit. When you talk about the fear as a comic, right? Let's of course, take all this personal shit out of it. Bill Cosby for a second.
Did you just throw Bill Cosby in the end of a end of a sentence?
You'll see why. Bill Cosby.
You can't. Okay,
I can't.
But can I just say?
I said put it aside.
Okay,
I said that.
But let me explain something.
But I preference that.
Let me explain something right now. You cannot just say at the end of a sentence.
Yeah, Bill Cosby.
You cannot go like, you know, let's throw the personal shit aside when Bill Cosby.
Yes.
So anyway, okay. you have to warn me, prepare me.
Are you right? All right, I'm about to say some deep shit, but it's going to start off as fucked up shit.
And then there we get go. To the good you shit. See? That,
okay.
Okay.
Are you ready?
All right. Bill Cosby. Got
all
it.
Right. So I was in Montreal, and I forgot how old Bill Cosby was. He was performing at some little thing. Bill Cosby was, let's just call it 70-something.
Okay.
Came out and he sat on a stool.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cosby started doing Bill Cosby. And there
the
was
comedy
a,
Bill Cosby.
The comedy Bill Cosby.
Got it.
And there was a sold out crowd at 70 something years old without any consistency in touring or real dedication to the craft over the course of time. But at the old age of the feeling and joy that comes from the laughter of a crowd is what we'll forever get high off of.
Yeah.
Right? And when I talked about being envious, I was like, man, I'm envious that he still gets to feel that at that age.
Mm-hmm.
I hope and pray that when I'm that age, I still have the desire to go in front of a crowd and do the thing that I fell in love with.
Mm-hmm.
I hope and pray that my love for the thing I do continues. Because the fear, to your point, when you talked about the sets, talk about the joke, am I funny, am I not? Is this working? Does that not work? All these thoughts are thoughts that we have.
Right.
But if you can beat all those thoughts and just maintain a high level of love for the craft and for the energy, it will be attached to the people that have invested in you through the years. And I looked at his crowd. Those people were old as shit in that crowd. A bunch of old fucking people came out. And I was like, it's because they grew up on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's their life. Their life was like always. His fans have still rolled with him prior to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Until this moment, they're still buying tickets and excited. Imagine as Trevor Noah and as Kevin Hart.
Well, don't put my name in the sentence. Go on.
Imagine. Well, I said you
imagine
first.
Imagine as Kevin Hart.
I put a gap.
Imagine as Kevin
myself.
Hart. Imagine as Kevin Hart.
Mm-hmm. It's your show. Imagine as Trevor Noah and Kevin Hart. We get to a place, man, and you look out and you see some old people still rocking with you.
Right.
What better feeling?
I'll tell you what better feeling for me. I hear what you're saying because I understand the moral of your story. What you're saying is, in life, be like Bill Cosby.
Wait, no, whoa, wait a second.
That was the moral of your story.
No,
you
wait.
Said, as,
wait,
as,
Trevor,
you said,
you
no matter how
that,
old you get,
no, you
keep
went,
doing it.
Just
this
fucking,
is this is what I heard you say. So
okay.
Now I don't agree with it, but because you're my guest, I don't argue with you.
Okay.
You know, I think this is a forum for everyone to air their opinions. I personally would have just told that story and not said who the comedian was. I would just say it was like an old guy on stage who was a great comedian. And
you know
I
what you're doing
audience...
right now? You're scaffolding.
Don't be afraid, Kev. Those are just tummy bubbles. You relax. So I'll tell you what's great. Look, I'm not dismissing it. I mean this honestly. It is great to have that, but I think what would be a greater feeling for me as a human being is to have that feeling regardless of whether or not I'm on stage.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
That's honestly what I try and hope to pursue in life is where I go, that thing on stage is beautiful.
Yeah.
It is a wonderful compliment to my life, but I genuinely want to feel like that. And I do in many moments now when I'm not on stage.
Well,
and so I try and move through the
world.
You've
been very active about voicing this. Like in our conversations, like,
you know me from the time.
Yes,
with
the Daily Show.
Yeah, you
what
know.
I loved even about the
you
Daily
know.
Show, and I remember I walked away when we were talking, and I was like, what an answer. Like, I was like, what? Like, why? He was like, it was just time.
Yeah,
he was
man,
like, it's... I just, you know, I got to a point where I was like, okay, and I want to pursue something else.
Yeah.
And you were like, and I'm so
I'm trying to be the best liver of life I can possibly be now.
It's very
genuinely.
Clear. It's
genuinely,
very,
genuine with all the peace dismal. I have. And, you know, have great conversations with people. Before I let you go, you're a very busy man. Let me ask you this question. I ask everybody on the podcast, what now? We meet Kevin Hart in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like you are perpetually building and perpetually expanding, I'd love to know what now as you move into the next stage of mm-hmm. doing everything. It's VC, it's mm-hmm. banking, it's all of these things. What? And do me a favor, Kevin. I ask you this as a friend and as a human being. Don't ever release like some shitty credit product that hurts black people and
I'm
poor
not
people.
Doing,
I'm
not
looking
gonna,
at you on camera
yes,
saying
I'm
this
not,
right now.
I will not do that.
I'm just saying this
I
to you right now, Kev.
I don't have a credit card coming out.
Yo,
Kev, I don't have a...
I'm letting you know face to face.
I'm telling you that I do not.
Your people love you.
Yes, I do not.
Do not screw us over.
I say this to you at face value.
I mean this, Kev.
My whole relationship
Yo,
with
I'm
my
just
financial
you know.
Partner
you remember,
is built
I even,
off of
you remember,
financial literacy.
You remember I had a dream. You remember I even had a dream about you once. So this is the weirdest dream I've ever had. One of the strangest dreams, right? I had a dream. And this was before you released it. I had a dream that Kevin Hart came to me and he was like, Trev, we got to release a fitness drink. We got to release a protein powder. And then I said, okay, Kev, I love this idea. I said, but what are the ingredients? Is it going to be good? And you said, fuck good. I said, man, Trev, who gives a shit if it's good? It's going to sell. We're going to do this. And I started crying. This is the weirdest dream I've ever had. Because, Kev, we don't even roll like that. We don't even, like, we've always been brothers in comedy. You've always been wonderful to me. But it's not like we roll every day. People might have this false assumption.
Yes.
This was a strange dream for me to have. And I remember I woke up and I was like, Kevin Hart, why would I even dream about that? A few weeks, no, maybe like a few months later, you released...
I released Vita Hustle.
Vita Hustle.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, it's real. But then I tasted your tequila. And you remember I called you about this. Because I don't know why. I've been very honest with you from the time I've known you. I called you about
the
tequila.
It's called a good relationship, Trevor.
No. I mean, it's like I'm more honest with you than people I've known for longer is what I mean, right?
Yes.
With very few, like,
very transparent.
Threads.
Very transparent.
Yeah, very transparent. Yes. And I remember I called you and I said, Kevin, I thought this tequila was going to be shit. It's actually delicious.
Yes. Yes.
And you said, well, first of all, I'm offended. But why would you say that? And I said, well, because I just assume it's a celebrity. You're going to put your name on a thing. And I was, and then you said something. You said, Trevor, you said, I'm trying to make everything I do be the best. You're like, I want to have the best tequila, not the best selling.
Yes.
I want to have the best tequila.
Yes.
I want to have the best protein. I want to have the best company. So what now? What's Kevin Hart moving towards now?
Well, Kevin Hart in third
person. Other than
person.
Therapy, because I know you're going to try that.
Yes. But what I will going. Say I'm moving towards now is finishing the sentences. There's incomplete sentences.
Oh, beautiful.
So I have to put periods on the sentences. And those periods are attached to the things that I'm building. And the things that I'm building, the pressure I feel I put on myself is because I'm not just building it for me. I'm building it for the people that have invested into me, into the idea. So Heartbeat and the level of success as a studio that I obtained to have, not for myself, but for all.
Yeah.
The big what now is like, the creative platform and opportunity for the stars of tomorrow. Like, I got my light. It's not going to get any brighter. Mm-hmm. The star's not going to get any bigger. But if the platform for, or the studio of, if I can be attached or a part of saying, come this way, and the people that come through that door become, man, that's a fucking amazing way to pass the baton.
That's beautiful, man.
So right now, I just want to get as close as I possibly can to open up that next door that I don't have to go through.
Yeah.
But that those of tomorrow can.
I love that, man.
That's what I want. That's what now.
I appreciate that, Kev.
Trevor, I like talking to you, man.
I love talking to you. I always enjoy speaking to you.
This is really good. I think low-key, I want to say that this was like your way of giving me a therapy session that I need.
No.
And I'm going to talk to you about it later.
No,
I think
Kev. No.
I think you gas bombed me. What is that term right? Did you gas bomb me? I think you gas bombed me.
I actually like that. I'm a gas bomb people. I appreciate you. I appreciate your transparency. I appreciate how you've always supported me. I always tell people the story and I never hold back. I go, nobody wanted to come on The Daily Show when I was starting. Everyone seemed, you know, like now I hold an Emmy. People go, oh, it's obvious, well-deserved. Nobody wanted to come on that
mm-hmm.
show.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to be the, because they were like, people were like, if I say I'm with him,
mm-hmm.
I don't know who he is, what he's mm-hmm. going to do, how he's going to, I understand that fear. I don't even hold it against people. You were literally the first person who said, I'll do it. I will open this random African person's TV show
Absolutely.
After Jon Stewart.
Absolutely.
And I'll ride with it. And I'm eternally grateful. I was like, Kevin Hart, and I get it. I was like, if he can support Bill Cosby, he can support
well,
me.
Okay. Well, that's a weird way to in that.
And I just want to say I appreciate you.
Okay.
For that,
well,
man.
I feel like we can edit that last piece out.
Yo, man, this was great. Thank you, yo.
Fucking love you, man.
Thank you so much.
This is great.
Yo, can I just tell you the funniest thing? We can cut it out or leave it in. The funniest moment was when I was pulling in into this place. A security guard. He's like, oh, this is not your guy. The guy who, like, someone who works outside. He's like, hey, yo, you that dude, man. What's going on? What's going on, Trev? Hey, Noah. I'm like, hey, what's up, man? He's like, oh, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I'm coming. He's like, oh, you coming, Kevin Hart? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, is this about the Cat Williams thing? I was like, no.
No, man.
He's like, what? No.
Why would you?
I was like, what do you?
No, man. What do you think we do? Oh, y'all coming to meet about that? Oh, it's about to go down here. Oh, he calling in the truth? What? I love you, man. I fucking love you, dude.
What Now with Trevor Noah is produced by Spotify Studios in partnership with Day Zero Productions, Fullwell 73, and Odyssey's Pineapple Street Studios. The show is executive produced by Trevor Noah, Ben Winston, Jenna Weiss-Berman, and Barry Finkel. Produced by Emmanuel Hapsis, Marina Henke, Jess Hackle, Natalie Pert, and Chelsea Williamson. Music, mixing, and mastering by Hannes Brown. Thank you so much for listening. Join me next Thursday for another episode of What Now?